Oh, well, he's obviously not here.
No. Is that a dressing room over there, Steve, or...
Paul, somebody's closing the door.
Blast. They've locked it. What a stupid fool. I ought to realize that somebody was watching us. Here, open this door.
Do you think it was Tony Wyman we heard, and he deliberately got us upstairs?
Wait a minute.
What is it?
Do you smell petrol?
Yes. Well, you're right. There's something burning.
Someone started a fire, Steve.
Oh, Paul.
We have to get this door open.
That was the fifth episode of the Francis Durbridge serial, Paul Temple and the Margot Mystery, with Peter Cook as Paul Temple and Marjorie Westbury as Steve. Production for the BBC was by Martin C. Webster.
Paul's got just under 24 hours to get that door open before the next episode. Will he and Steve survive the fire? Find out at the same time tomorrow. Next today, we're back on Smuggler's Island with Hercule Poirot.
You're listening to BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, the investigating continues for Hercule Poirot and his police colleagues. And after yesterday's discovery in one of the rooms, he's decided to talk to the chambermaid.
Arlena Marshall had come down to the Jolly Roger Hotel on Smuggler's Island to pursue her love affair with Patrick Redfern, under the noses, as I think you say, of his wife and her husband. And she had been brutally strangled in a deserted cove. Yet those who had most cause to wish her dead, the wife, Christine Redfern, and the husband, Captain Marshall, had apparently sound alibis. Who could it have been that Arlena had gone out to meet at that lonely beach? Certainly not her lover, who was desperately searching for her. Could it have been the solitary yachtsman, Horace Blatt, who was most certainly up to something? Or the fanatic woman-hating clergyman, Stephen Lane? Colonel Weston and I had searched the rooms in the hotel for any clues, but we were none the wiser.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and George Baker as Colonel Weston in Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun.
This door off the balcony next to Miss Darnley's room. Any idea where it goes to, Poirot?
Well, there is only one way to find out, mon ami.
An outside staircase down to the beach.
I fancy this is the way people go down to bathe before breakfast. And, vous voyez, over by those rocks, there is a path which goes up to join the main route from the causeway.
So that one could go down these stairs, take the path and go right across the island without having to go through the front of the hotel at all. If he did it, that's the way he went.
Huh? Which he, mon ami?
Captain Marshall. Despite everything, I still think he's our man.
Excuse me, Colonel Weston, but I've got Gladys Elcombe, the chambermaid of this floor, waiting to be questioned. I think she might prove quite useful.
Well, none of us actually liked her, you might say. She wasn't really a lady. More like an actress.
She was an actress.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying. She went on exactly as she felt like it.
Can you tell us how things were between her and her husband?
You don't think it was him that did it, sir?
Do you?
Oh, I wouldn't like to think so. He's such a real gentleman, Captain Marshall. He couldn't do a thing like that.
But you are not sure, Gladys. I hear it in your voice.
It's just that everyone's been talking about her and Mr. Redfern, and if Captain Marshall had found out... Well, he's a very quiet gentleman. But he's a bit stiff, if you know what I mean.
But you've nothing definite to go on? Nothing you might have heard either of them say to each other?
No, sir. Nothing definite like that.
I think that will do for the present. Poirot?
When you cleaned Miss Marshall's room this morning, did you do the fireplace?
There wasn't any fire to do, sir. Not at this time of year.
And there was nothing in the fireplace itself?
No. If there had been, I'd have noticed.
What time did you do her room?
At 9:15, sir, when she'd gone down to breakfast.
And did she come up to her room again?
Yes, at about 9:45.
Did she stay in her room?
I think so, sir. She came out in rather an hurry, just before 10:30.
And you didn't go into her room again?
No, sir.
Now, there is one more thing I want to know. What people went swimming before breakfast this morning?
Well, sir, Captain Marshall and Miss Brewster were the early ones this morning, I think. They always go down for an early morning dip.
Did you see them?
No, sir, but their wet bathing things were hanging over the balcony rail as usual.
Miss Linda Marshall did not bathe this morning, hmm?
No, all her bathing dresses were quite dry, though she usually goes for a dip most mornings.
Now, I wonder if you have noticed whether a bottle is missing from any of the rooms you look after in this wing.
A bottle, sir? What kind of bottle?
Unfortunately, I do not know. But would you be likely to notice if one had gone?
I shouldn't from Mrs. Marshall's room, and that's a fact. She's got ever so many. And I couldn't be too sure about Miss Stanley either.
But the others?
Well, I might notice if I were to look special.
Perhaps you would be so good as to do so.
Certainly, sir.
Thank you.
What's all this about, Poirot? Mm-hmm.
My orderly mind is vexed by trifles, mon ami. Miss Brewster said that when she was bathing before breakfast, a bottle was thrown from above and nearly hit her. I want to know who threw that bottle and why.
But, my dear chap, anyone could have chucked a bottle away.
No, not at all. If you have an empty bottle on your dressing table or in your bathroom, what do you do with it? I will tell you. You put it in a waste paper basket. You do not go to the trouble of going out onto your balcony and hurling it into the sea. You would only do that if you did not want anyone to notice that particular bottle.
But surely there's a perfectly simple... Come in.
Miss Darnley's waiting outside, sir. She says there's something she forgot to tell you.
Oh, well, we'd better hear it then.
Oh, and it looks as if Marshall's in the clear about having to write those letters urgently this morning. I found this among his papers.
My dear Marshall, sorry to worry you on your holiday, but an entirely unforeseen situation has arisen over the Burley and Tendring contracts. Oh, yes. This seems to confirm his story. You would better ask Miss Darnley to step in, Inspector.
Do go in, Miss Darnley.
I'm frightfully sorry. It probably isn't worth bothering you about.
Oh, won't you sit down?
Oh, it isn't worth sitting down for. It's simply this. I told you that I spent the whole morning on Sunny Ledge, but that isn't strictly accurate. At around 11:15, I went back to the hotel to get my sunglasses. My eyes were getting tired reading.
You went straight back to your room and out again?
Yes. Well, I did look in on Captain Marshall. I heard his typewriter going, and I thought it was stupid of him to stay indoors on such a lovely day.
What did he say?
When I opened the door, he was typing so vigorously and frowning and looking so concentrated that I just went away quietly. I don't think he even saw me come in.
And what was the time then, Miss Darnley?
About 11:20. I noticed the clock by the reception desk as I was going out.
Thank you, Miss Darnley, for taking such trouble.
Well, I just thought you ought to know. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Well, that washes Marshall right out.
I agree. What are you looking so thoughtful about, Poirot?
I was wondering why Miss Darnley suddenly volunteered this extra evidence.
Well, there's nothing suspicious about that, surely.
No. It's just that she goes out of her way to provide the gallant captain with an alibi.
Yes?
Excuse me, but I've had a good look, sir. And as far as I can tell, I can't see that there's a bottle missing from any of them.
Ah, no matter. We will leave it.
Is there anything else, sir?
Yes. Tell me, have you noticed anything unexplained, out of the ordinary? You know, something that has made you say to yourself, that's funny?
Well, yes. There was one thing. Just a bath being run. And I did say to Elsie that it was funny, somebody having a bath at 12:00. before lunch. Mm.
Do you know who was having a bath, mademoiselle?
I think we'd better be getting on, don't you, Poirot?
Huh? Oh, yes, of course, Colonel. Yes, thank you, mademoiselle.
Thank you, sir.
It's time to have a look at that cave, don't you think?
You should take Mr. Redfern with you, since he knows the exact location.
Well, aren't you coming?
No, alas, I am like Miss Brewster and Mrs. Redfern. I do not care for perpendicular ladders.
Well, then you can take a boat.
Oh, no, my stomach, it is not happy at sea.
Nonsense, man, as calm as a mill pond today. You can't let us down. We might miss something without you.
That is true.
Oh, by the way, sir, the reverend gentleman has just got back, Colonel.
What's that?
Stephen Lane, sir. I asked him to wait in the lounge.
Ah, good, Colgate. We should certainly go and have a word with him.
What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground.
Sorry?
Murder. One of the first sins known on earth.
If you could just give us your movements today, sir.
Willingly. I'm fond of walking. Today I went to St. Petroc in the Coombe. That is about 7 miles from here. A very pleasant walk along winding lanes. I visited the church. It has some fragments of early glass and a splendid painted screen with a figure of St. Petroc and his dragon.
Did you meet anyone on your walk, Mr. Lane?
No. A couple of boys on bicycles passed me once. But if you want proof of my statement, I wrote down my name in the visitor's book in the church.
Is there anything you can tell us about the dead woman that might give some indication of who could have killed her? Anything you heard or saw?
I heard nothing. But I can tell you this. I knew instinctively as soon as I saw that Elena Marshall was a focus of evil. Woman can be a man's help and inspiration in life. She can also be man's downfall. She can drag a man down to the level of the beast. Elena Marshall was such a woman, made in the image of Jezebel and Aholibah. Now she has been struck down in the midst of her wickedness.
But you have no idea who might have struck her down. She was, in fact, strangled by a pair of human hands.
I know nothing. Nothing.
We must get to the cove.
Is that where it happened?
That is where it happened, Mr. Lane.
Can I come with you?
But certainly. You can accompany us and Mr. Redfern there in the boat. Let us be on our way.
The lads have been over the beach pretty thoroughly, sir. But I can't say they've come up with much. One empty cigarette packet, a chicken bone, 3 pieces of string and a pair of scissors. The scissors have obviously been left out quite recently. They're still bright and shining. They weren't out in yesterday's rain.
Where were they found?
Close by the bottom of the ladder. And there was this fragment of a pipe.
Oh, quality briar. Expensive.
You smoke a pipe, do you not, Mr. Lane?
Oh, yes. It's my old friend and companion. I've got it here. Never leaves my pocket. Tell me, where was the body found?
Just about where you're standing, sir.
Oh.
Now then, Mr. Redfern, where's the entrance to this cave? I can't see any sign of it.
It's over here. Just by this pile of rocks, the entrance is round here.
Oh. It looks very narrow. It would be difficult for a man to squeeze through that.
You'll find its appearance is deceptive. You'll just about manage it, Monsieur Poirot.
Yes. Quite a handy little place. You'd never suspect it was here from the outside. Oh, what is it, Poirot?
Trace of perfume, perhaps?
Well, I can't smell anything. Doesn't seem to be anything of interest.
There is a ledge up there. Might be worth investigating, but it is beyond my reach. You are a tall man, Mr. Lane. Could I ask you to find out if there is anything there?
Of course. Yes. There's a box of some sort.
Careful. Don't handle it more than you can help. There may be fingerprints.
A sandwich tin.
Ah, left behind from somebody's picnic, I suppose. Oh, very neat. Containers for salt and pepper and mustard. Well, that's funny. They're all full of salt.
Are you quite certain that it is salt, Inspector?
Well, this isn't salt. Not by a long way.
Could be a drug of some sort.
Better send it off straight away. Get your men to go over this place with a fine tooth comb. We may as well return to the hotel.
By all means, and let us go back while the sea is still calm.
Could she have been a drug addict, Poirot?
Alena Marshall? I should doubt that. She had steady nerves, radiant health. No, I do not think she took drugs.
In that case, she may have run into the business accidentally and was put out of the way by the people running the show. For all we know...
They said I'd find you in here. I've just heard the news.
This is Mr. Horace Blatt, Colonel.
Do sit down, Mr. Blatt.
No, I won't, if you don't mind. I've been out in the boat since early this morning, missed the whole blinking show. She was strangled, was she?
She was, Mr. Blatt.
Nasty. Very nasty. And mind you, she asked for it. Hot stuff. Très moutard, eh, Monsieur Poirot? Any idea who did it?
Well, you know, we're supposed to be asking you the questions.
Oh, far away, then.
You said you went sailing this morning. What time would that have been?
Left here at 9:45.
Was anyone with you?
Not a soul. All on my little lonesome, Colonel.
Where did you go?
Along the coast in the direction of Plymouth. Well, I didn't get very far. Not much in the way of wind. In the end, I gave it up as a bad job and headed for home. Well, that's about it.
Thank you, Mr. Blatt.
One thing I can tell you. It wasn't me. The fair Arlena had no use for me. She had her own blue-eyed boy. And if you ask me, Marshall was getting wise to it.
Now, what makes you say that?
I saw him give Redfern a dirty look once or twice. Bit of a dark horse, Marshall. Looks as if he's half asleep most of the time, but I did hear that he nearly killed a bloke who'd welched on him over a business deal. I give you that for what it's worth.
We believe that Mrs. Marshall went to Pixie Cove this morning to meet someone. Have you any idea who that someone might be?
Redfern. No question.
No, it was not Mr. Redfern.
Well, then I haven't the foggiest. Well, it couldn't have been Gardner. His wife never lets him out of her sight. Mind you, I have seen the Reverend looking at her a good bit. He may have thought she was the daughter of Satan, but I bet he wouldn't have minded getting his fingers burned. Anyway, if that's it as far as I'm concerned, I'm off to the bar.
Thank you, Mr. Blatt. What do you make of him, Poirot? You've seen more of him than I have.
He likes to play the role of the rough diamond. But today there is something I have not seen before.
Oh, and what's that?
I think he is nervous.
It didn't take them long to identify that stuff we found in the sandwich box. Diamorphine hydrochloride.
Heroin.
No, that's more like it. I'll wager that this is at the bottom of the whole business. A bit closer to the mark than worrying about people running bars and throwing bottles into the sea.
Excuse me, Colonel Weston, may I have a word?
What can I do for you?
Can you tell me what arrangements I can make about the funeral?
I think the inquest will be the day after tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'd like to return your letters, Captain.
Thank you, Inspector. I hope this means that my character is clear.
Looks very much like it. The chambermaid heard you typing, and Miss Darnley told us that she came to your room at 11:20, but you looked so busy she didn't want to disturb you. She said you didn't even notice her.
As a matter of fact, she is wrong. I did see her, though she may not have been aware of the fact. I caught sight of her in the mirror. And now I better get these letters to the post. Where will the inquest be held?
In the old courthouse in Leathercombe.
It didn't go so badly, did it?
Difficult to say. They were so cautious.
Any idea what the police think?
They say they're perfectly happy with my alibi, but they still seem pretty suspicious.
There are times when I can't believe that any of this really happened.
Don't you worry. We'll pull through, all right. But we better be getting back. Linda will be getting anxious.
What happened, Daddy? What did they say?
Inquest adjourned. For a fortnight.
That means they haven't decided.
More evidence is needed.
But what do they think?
Well, whatever the police think, they're not giving it away at present. We shall all just have to wait. Look, Linda, I've got a couple of urgent phone calls to make. I'll be back as quickly as I can.
Try not to let it worry you so much. I know it's all been very terrible, but it's no good brooding over it. I mean, it isn't as if you were fond of Arlena.
No, I wasn't fond of her.
Then why are you getting so obsessed by it all?
You don't understand.
I think I do, my dear.
No, you don't. You don't understand in the least. And Christine, Mrs. Redfern doesn't either. You just think it's morbid that I'm dwelling on it all when I needn't. But it isn't like that at all. If you knew what I know.
What is it that you know, Linda?
Nothing.
Be careful, Linda. Be very careful. Alena is dead. That's all there is to it. Forget it all and for goodness sake, hold your tongue.
If Father...
Don't talk about it.
I've got to say one thing. My mother...
What about her?
She was tried for murder, wasn't she?
Yes.
And then Father married her. That looks, doesn't it, as though Father didn't think murder very wrong.
Don't say things like that. The police haven't got anything against your father. He's got an alibi. They know he couldn't have done it. Do you understand that? You'll be able to leave here soon. You'll forget everything. You'll see you will.
I shall never forget. Never.
Madame Redfern, there is something I wish to know.
And what is that?
It was a chance phrase of yours the other day that caught my attention.
Really?
You were describing how you went into Linda Marshall's room and found her absent, and how she returned, and you asked her where she had been.
And I said she had been bathing.
No, but you did not say that. Your words were, she said she had been bathing.
It's the same thing.
No, madame. It is not quite the same thing. It suggests that it was not evident to you that she had been bathing. Now, what was there about her appearance or her manner that led you to be surprised when she told you that?
That's very clever of you. I remember now. I was a little surprised because she was carrying a parcel in her hand.
A parcel? Do you happen to know what was in it?
As a matter of fact, I do. The string broke and they were scattered all over the floor.
What were scattered?
Candles. I helped her pick them up.
Candles. And how did she react when this happened?
She was upset, embarrassed. But I don't understand what this is about.
Have you seen a book like this before?
I'm not sure. It may have been the one Linda was looking at in the lending library in Leathercombe the other day. She put it back on the shelf when she noticed me. I don't know what it was exactly.
I'll see for yourself.
A history of witchcraft, sorcery, and the compounding of untraceable poisons. I don't understand. What does it mean?
I fear it may mean a great deal. One more question. On the morning of the murder, did you take a bath before you went out to play tennis?
Why on earth should I do that? I wouldn't have had time anyway. Why do you ask?
Oh, it is of no importance.
So, it's my turn, is it?
I do not understand, mademoiselle.
While the chief constable was conducting his little inquisition, you sat by and said nothing. Now I think you are conducting your own inquiry. First Christine Redfern, and now me.
You are very intelligent, mademoiselle. I've thought so ever since I arrived here. It would be a pleasure to discuss this business with you.
You want to know what I think about the whole thing?
It would be very interesting.
I think it's really very simple. The clue is in Arlena's past.
The past?
Well, not necessarily the very remote past. Arlena was fatally attractive to men, and I suspect that she got tired of them rather easily.
And then discarded them.
Exactly. And amongst her followers was a man who resented that. Probably some tepid little man, vain and sensitive. I think he followed her down here, waited his opportunity, and killed her. The day of the murder, it was glorious sunshine. But on the day before, there was rain and thick mist. Anyone could come to the island then without being seen. He only had to go down to the beach and spend the night in the cave. That mist, Monsieur Poirot, is important.
There is a good deal of truth in what you have said.
Anyway, that's my theory, for what it's worth. Now, tell me yours.
Mademoiselle, I am a very simple person. I always incline to the belief that the crime is invariably committed by the most likely person. From the very beginning, it seemed to me that one person was most clearly indicated.
Go on.
But you see, there is what you call a fly in the ointment. It seems impossible for that person to have committed the crime.
Well?
So, what do we do about it? That is the problem. May I ask you a question?
Of course.
When you came in to change for tennis on the morning of the murder, did you take a bath?
The bath? What do you mean?
You know, a bath. You turn on the taps, it fills up with water, you get into it.
No, Monsieur Poirot, I did not take a bath.
So, nobody took a bath. That is extremely interesting.
I suppose this is the Sherlock Holmes touch.
No. Will you permit me to be impertinent, madame?
I'm sure you couldn't be impertinent, Monsieur Poirot.
That is very kind of you. Then may I venture to say that the scent you use is delicious. It has a nuance, a delicate, elusive charm. Gabrielle number 8, I think.
How clever you are. Yes, I always use it.
So did the late Mrs. Marshall. It is chic, and very expensive.
I happen to like it.
You sat where we are now, mademoiselle, on the morning of the crime. You were seen here, or at least your sunshade was seen, by Miss Brewster and Mr. Redfern as they passed by in their boat. During the morning, are you sure you did not go down to Pixie Cove and enter the cave there?
Are you asking me if I killed Arlena Marshall?
On the day of the murder, someone had been in that cave who used Gabrielle number 8.
You just said yourself, Monsieur Poirot, that Arlena Marshall used the same scent. She was on the beach there that day. Presumably she went into the cave.
Ah, but why should she go into the cave? It is dark and narrow there, and extremely uncomfortable.
Don't ask me for reasons. Since she was actually in Pixie Cove, she was the most likely person. I've told you I never left this place the whole morning.
Except for the time you went back to the hotel and looked into Captain Marshall's room.
Yes, I'd forgotten that.
And you were wrong, you know. Captain Marshall did see you.
Kenneth saw me. Did he say so?
He saw you in the mirror that hangs over the table.
Why are you looking at my hands? Surely you can't imagine.
Imagine what, mademoiselle?
Nothing.
By the way, mademoiselle, do you happen to know where Miss Linda is at the moment?
She said she was going down to Gull Cove. Oh, but you don't need to ask her any more questions, surely.
What is it? Why have you come to look for me? What do you want?
The other day you told the chief constable that you were fond of your stepmother and that she was very kind to you.
Well?
That was not true, was it, mademoiselle?
Yes, it was.
No. She may not have been actually unkind to you, but you were not fond of her. I think that you disliked her very much. That was plain to see.
Perhaps I didn't like her very much. But one can't say that when a person is dead. It wouldn't be decent.
Did they teach you that at school?
More or less.
When a person has been murdered, it is more important to be truthful than decent.
I suppose you would say a thing like that.
I would say it. And I do say it. It is my business, you see, to find out who killed your stepmother.
I want to forget it all. It's so horrible.
But you cannot forget it, can you?
I suppose some beastly madman killed her.
No. I do not think it was like that at all.
You sound as if you knew.
Perhaps I do know. I know that you are troubled. Very troubled. Will you trust me to do all that I can to help you?
You've got it all wrong. There's nothing you can do for me. I don't know what you're talking about.
I am talking about candles.
I won't listen to you. Leave me alone. I won't listen.
But you must listen, mademoiselle. And you know why, do you not?
In part 4 of Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Colonel Weston by George Baker. Captain Marshall, Robin Ellis. Linda Marshall, Lindsay Fawcett. Rosamund Darnley, Sabina Franklin. Christine Redfern, Susanna Corbett. Patrick Redfern, Ian Glenn. The Reverend Stephen Lane, Ewan Thomas. Horace Blatt, John Hartley. Gladys, Nicole Forbes. Inspector Colgate, Gerard McDermott. Evil Under the Sun is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
And tomorrow it looks like Poirot's cross-examination of the young Linda might have devastating consequences. The final chapter will see the whole thing come out, of course, and that's at the same time as part of our Crime and Thrillers Hour.
Maximum occupancy 15. He closed his eyes tightly. Then he looked again. Single occupant, 180 days. There it was, quite plainly. Upon entering shelter, see that first hatch is securely locked and sealed.
Beata Leibowitz, ora pro me.
He had uncovered relics of the saint.
Encounter the age after the apocalypse in Walter M. Miller's Fiat Homo. Part 1 of A Canticle for Leibowitz, starting on Monday evening in the 7th Dimension at 6:30 and again at 12:30.
Marking 90 years of radio in 90 seconds.
1961. For the Jews, there were two Adolfs, Adolf Hitler and Adolf Eichmann.
Adolf Eichmann.
The Eichmann trial made the Holocaust for the first time what it is today. This was a major event. And today we know much more.
The Jerusalem courtroom was a chamber of horrors today as one witness after another took the stand to describe a different aspect of the fate of the Jews of Poland during the Second World War. One witness, now a magistrate in Tel Aviv, gave a hair-raising account of his wartime experiences. It was difficult, he said, to remember a day when there were no killings and no deaths.
We were 2,000 prisoners in this concentration camp. Typhus started to spread very quickly.
Another person to give evidence today was Dr. Leon Wells. He was the sole survivor of a large family of 60 to 70 people.
When we got to the cent, everybody got a shovel and we started to dig our own grave.
At one point today, a witness paused and asked the court, "Are you interested in my continuing my story?" The prosecutor replied, "Interested, yes. The question is, have we got the strength?"
And you can explore 90 years of BBC Radio by going to the 4Extra website.
BBC Radio 4Extra.
This is 4Extra, where we have a short story next, and then four older women with a unique friendship prepare for a farewell. Sheila Delaney's Baloney Said Salome is in 15 minutes. But now, I Was There Too, continuing our series of short stories giving unexpected insights into some pivotal moments in history from witnesses who were there. Today, in Permanent Wave by Ian Sampson, we go behind a rather famous front door to discover what it might have been like to dress the hair of one of the country's most influential women. The reader is Maggie Steed.
Combs, brushes, Carmen rollers, hair back off the face, like doing up your little dolly. She always reminded me of a doll, actually. I had a lovely doll when I was little. Beautiful little doll. They all had china faces in those days, of course. Very fragile. I can see it now, that doll. I was taking her over the road to show my Auntie Lil one day. It was in the snow and the road was icy and I dropped her. God, I cried, howling. And there was this place called the Doll Hospital near where we lived in Chapel Heath. It was just a man who'd set up a little business in his shed, I suppose. So we took the doll to him. What was he called? Oh, I can't remember what he was called. Anyway, he couldn't fix her. And that's your lot, I'm afraid, my old dad said. We didn't have any money for another doll. That was it. She was a one-off. Unique. She's forgotten to take off her earrings again. She's been distracted with all this. Can't blame her. She looks nice. Burgundy, twin set, regal looking. Anyway, comb it back. Roots showing a bit. Could do with a bit of colour. And getting a bit thin, the texture. It's the age, though. I'm the same. We've got old at the same rate, I suppose, the pair of us. Couple of wrinklies now. She had lovely skin when she started. Reminded me a bit of Katharine Hepburn and Hattie Jakes. Sort of a cross between the two. Now look at us. We have become a grandmother. Quick wash. Make up the perm mix. She's always liked the smell. Nice and clean, she always says. Ammonia. I don't like it. Not really. Reminds her of the grocer's shop growing up. I think that's why people liked her. They thought she was a bit like them. I mean, not much. But more like them than most of the others. You know, Mr. Heath and them. We'd have chatted a bit more in the early days. She's gone quiet recently. What with all the... You know. I'm a couple of years older, so she'd ask my advice. Like a sister, I suppose. Face them down, I'd say, when she was starting out. That's what my old dad had taught me. Don't turn your back on them, I always said.